Say your names and tell me what you do.
My name is Ishram. I'm a student at UBC. I'm in my second year, and I organize with the SJC, which is the Social Justice Center.
My name is Gabby. I am also at UBC as a student. This is my fifth and final year, and I'm an organizer with the UBC Social Justice Center.
So I noticed that both of you are admins in the COVID-19 Coming Together group, I think. Were you guys the founders, or did you guys start this initiative?
Yeah, this was kind of born out of discussions among a few students at UBC about how we can connect people together during this pandemic, because a lot of the negative impacts of health crises often most strongly impact poor people, people who don't have housing, people who are food insecure, disabled people, and immunocompromised people. We thought it would be important to build some sort of network to share resources, support each other, and show solidarity for healthcare workers and the vulnerable while building community and amplifying social movements that are fighting for critical access to healthcare, housing, and workers' rights. And so we decided to create a mutual aid Facebook group, which now has over 26,000 people in the group. The number right now, actually, I'm looking at it, is 28,364 members, and it's just about a week old.
Why did you guys pick Facebook to be the medium?
We chose Facebook because we decided that a lot of people who are older have access to Facebook. It's the most widely used social media platform, especially for people over the age of 20. And what we wanted to do is make this entire platform and process easy to use for as many people as possible in as short of a period as possible. And a Facebook page does that. It allows us to expand quickly and expand in a way that allows people who need help immediately get that help.
And another big thing for us in choosing the Facebook group is that, or the platform, is that it allows us to really tangibly see the community that forms from it. Because, as Ishram was saying, we're able to make connections or facilitate connections being made quite easily. And then the kind of rapid growth of the Facebook group, I think, also speaks to the amount of community and the amount of care and collective power that has grown just from that one platform. Although we're also working with some tech developers to try to find another platform that would also work well and is more kind of like neighborhood focused. So there is kind of an idea of expanding into a multitude of different platforms so that folks can choose and decide for themselves which one works best for them.
What do you guys think about the government's response to the pandemic?
It's been difficult to watch. We are specifically concerned about the BCNDP's response. Two things come to mind. The first is that the BCNDP's financial response has been a $1,000 one-time payment to people who are directly affected by the pandemic and can't work as a result of it. So it's a means-tested one-time $1,000 payment. The striking thing about this payment is that it's actually worse than the response that the Republicans in the states have issued, which is a $1,000 one-time payment that's universal. And so it's quite striking to have our progressive, quote-unquote progressive BCNDP government give a means-tested payment to a minority of workers in our province, while thousands of people will struggle to pay rent on April 1st. Thousands of people are worrying about getting evicted. Thousands of people are doing the math about whether or not they can make groceries work this week. So it's deeply disappointing to see kind of the best we're told of the BCNDP government's the best we're ever going to get. That government has been so behind the curve. The other thing is that the BCNDP has rejected calls to implement a universal moratorium on evictions. This is an action that Trump and Doug Ford have done. not the most progressive leaders. But the BCNDP hasn't done this. Instead, they put a moratorium on evictions from BC housing units, which they directly control. And they've directly said that they would leave all other evictions up to landlords, which we know doesn't really work. You can scroll through Twitter and see horror stories from tenants who just are being controlled by their landlords. I was reading this one about one person telling their landlord that they can't make rent because they got fired, and the landlord said something like, there will be consequences if you can't pay rent. And there's nothing protecting people who can't make rent right now. Thousands are facing this predicament. And the other thing is that it shows the BCNDP's long-lasting complicity in destructive systems, systems of oppression. They've recently escalated the RCMP's occupation of the Wet'suwet'en territory. And so we can use this opportunity to really call on the BCNDP to be a better party.
Gabby, do you have anything to add?
I think the other thing that's been really striking for me is that there has been a lack of consideration, from what I've seen, of how this crisis is impacting the folks who are most affected. So especially like with this one-time payment, that is again means tested, so you have to prove that your income has been affected. That doesn't protect workers who may have precarious migration status. It doesn't protect workers who maybe may have more informal work situations, and it hasn't protected, or from what I've seen, the BCNDP also haven't done a lot to protect folks in terms of preventing layoffs and helping folks get employment insurance or getting paid sick leave, and that I think is a really big problem that we're seeing. I think there's a lot of areas that the BCNDP can push the conversation, but there really are a lot of areas that the BCNDP could push the conversation, especially given how this crisis is disproportionately impacting low-income communities, folks who are, again, have precarious migration status, folks who are incarcerated, and other folks who, again, are most directly impacted by the crisis.
What actions have we seen from the municipal government on this front?
So the municipal government's response has actually been quite refreshing. So far, they passed an emergency motion, which kind of cuts a lot of the bureaucracy out of the response that kind of the staff can launch. But there's also a lot the municipal government can still do. The municipal government can use their powers to enforce eviction protections. The Mayor Kennedy Stewart called for the province to implement a moratorium on evictions, but actually didn't really follow through. We know from experience that these letters don't actually do anything. So the municipal government does have a lot of power, and there's a lot of work that can be done, specifically around the downtown east side. There are representatives on the municipal level, like John Cooper of the NPA, who are continuing to call for Oppenheimer Park to be cleared through an injunction, which is just really disheartening because it's further pushing people who are vulnerable and susceptible to this virus into more precarious situations, when in fact we should be housing these folks. California is in the process of housing its homeless population, and we know that we can do this. There are towns and cities all across the states and Canada who are in the process of doing this. We always could have ended homelessness, and now is a very important time to actually put our money where our mouths are. We talk a lot about housing as a human right. Let's prove that we actually believe this by putting people into housing.
So the response to the Facebook page has been really good, and people are meeting and connecting on it. But do you feel like you are filling in some gap that the government has left?
I definitely think so. I think that the responses that we've seen for a number of reasons that we've already laid out coming from our institutions and our government have been really inadequate, and that they've left a lot of holes for us to fill. And I think that we've been trying to do that not just on an individual basis, but on a community basis that builds collective power and that builds these relationships that are grounded in place and grounded in need and grounded in caring for one another. I think that this is especially important because of the rhetoric that we're seeing around COVID-19 in this crisis that relies quite heavily often on individualistic notions of health and well-being, and also on a lot of racist rhetoric around reasons for the spread of COVID-19. And so I think that this this group that we've started and that we've had the privilege of helping to grow is really a really big part of showing that or providing really material forms of care for one another in the state of a crisis. The overwhelming amount of community support that we've witnessed and that we've had the privilege of being a part of really speaks to how needed something like this group is and speaks to the importance of building community and building relationships of care and of trust that are grounded in place when institutions are failing us right now, and they've been failing us for years.
Has the response been surprising in some ways? Has the response been surprising when it comes to, you know, people helping each other out? Is that what you expected?
Well, I think that when things get tough and when we're fighting against some common force, solidarity is a beautiful thing, and it brings people together. It's brought us together time and time again in our history. And this crisis is a time that we can, or an opportunity that we can use to come together and join our forces and hopefully build a more inclusive and more equitable future. We want to live in a society in which each of us has access to healthcare, childcare, social support, clean water, dignified housing, workers' rights, and a healthy environment. And all of that happens when we work in solidarity with each other. And our focus isn't like one-time transactions of kindness. It's systems of solidarity, systems of community support, reinforced by how strongly we're interconnected with each other. And so hopefully we can use this opportunity to make sure that we care for each other and that we reach out to people in our communities who need help, who can't go outside because they're old or poor or are immunocompromised for other reasons. We can have a better society. And one of the most striking things about this crisis is that's really clarified my politics for me, because what we're seeing around the world is just this influx of progressive policies that are being passed as a response for this crisis. BC now has free transit. Donald Trump and the Republicans are talking about universal basic income. Doug Ford passed a moratorium on evictions. They tell us that these things are too radical in times of stability, but that we're passing them in times of economic plight and of crisis. That means that we can definitely get these policies passed, that we can definitely ensure a better day for our workers, a better world for our future, a better society that's built on the needs of human people rather than corporate profits. And if we can do that now, we can definitely do it when this crisis is over. So I think we can use this responsibility or this opportunity as a wake-up call. And that's why we're doing this. It's out of solidarity, not random acts of kindness. It's about building community power to achieve a society that works for working class, poor, marginalized people.
Are you guys working with other organizations?
Yeah, I can speak to that a little bit. So one of the things that we're doing is we're trying to be really, again, grounded in the areas of need that are in our city. What I was saying was that we're trying to be really grounded in the areas of need for our city. So what that looks like for us is really trying to support the frontline organizations who are working in the Downtown East Side. This is a community that is especially vulnerable to the impacts of COVID-19. And so we're really trying to foreground their work and hope to be able to act in allyship and solidarity to fill in whatever needs that they have. And then another thing that we're doing is that while we do really hope to be grounded in place and grounded in the local in local community sharing, we're also connecting with different mutual aid groups that have popped up across Turtle Island and are trying to build collective power that extends beyond the immediate and local.
In an email release, press release or something that I received, there was mention of having, you guys had a Kickstarter or like a fundraising. Is that correct?
Yes. So what we're doing, or another way that we're trying to meet the needs that we're seeing in our communities, is that we have this GoFundMe fundraiser. And essentially what the fundraiser is for is that we're hoping to raise around $100,000. I'm currently raised $30,000. And this fund wouldn't go towards us. It would go towards meeting the needs of people to act as kind of like emergency funding. So we do have an application up, and we want to assist as many people as possible by redistributing small stipends from $25 to $100. Again, this fundraiser is to redistribute money. And so we're trying to assist as many people as possible by redistributing or by distributing small stipends from $25 to $100 to folks that are the most vulnerable and that need this assistance the most. And there's an application that you can go to on our Twitter page, and that's also linked in the Facebook group.
So it says that a group of volunteers will be going over the applications. How will you guys be deciding who gets how much money?
Yeah, so we've set up a structure where we have kind of different groups of people that are going through the funding and trying to come to a consensus based on who needs the funding the most and who is the most vulnerable to the crisis. The details are still being solidified a little bit, but they will be communicated via Twitter and the press as soon as they're available.
Can you speak on the role of social media in modern organizing?
Because we can't organize in shared physical spaces, obviously, we've had to resort to Zoom calls. So our team's been meeting over Zoom almost daily, and hopefully that'll be less frequent because things have gotten rolling. But it's been a challenge, but we're all meeting frequently. And I think one of the great things about social media is that it allows us to be doing a lot of this work on our own time and fitting other things that we have to tend to in our lives in our schedules. But it's definitely been a challenge. It's a lot easier to interact with people in person, but there's nothing that we can do right now. But hopefully things will get better. We're looking to the future, and what we know is that this crisis will last a few more months, and we have to put our heads down and do the work and hopefully come out of this and emerge out of this as a better society and as a better collective of organizers.
Okay, that's it for the questions. Thank you guys so much for agreeing to be interviewed.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
All right, bye-bye. Bye.
I'm
off. This is Ira Glass of This American Life. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. I have no idea what that means. Somebody just asked me to say this.
reluctant speech in the stockroom next to the peaches. Take fountain bone shed sherry. Did you make your second comeback?